I'm Ruthie, host of Out There, here on Valley Free Radio. Tune in for stories from the streets and paths of Northampton and beyond, Fridays from 4 to 5 p.m. Get out if you can, but if you can't get out, tune in. We don't care if we live out of date. We don't care if we're a little bit late. Gonna make a sin, baby, me and you. Out There.
It is indeed Friday. Oh, yes. It is indeed Friday. Friday, June 24th. 24th says the calendar, and I'm live in the studio, stumbling along here. Now, last week when I did the show, there's a new mic set up here, and I noticed when I listened to the recording show that my talking sound quality was real bad. It's real sensitive to movements when you move your mouth from the mic. They say kiss the mic, so I'm going to just have to keep kissing it for the whole hour, whatever I'm talking, I guess. Anyway, for today's show, I have an interview with Brant Jones, a teacher at Northampton High School, talking about a bike trip that he organized with Northampton High School sophomores, a four-day bike trip a couple weeks ago through Western Mass, and also Ava, one of the students that went. I also have, I got a lot of little random clips today, like Shannon from Valley Bike Share talking at the Valley Bike Share dock opening in Bay State on Riverside Drive. That happened last Saturday. Also, Winston Close talking about his corded lawnmower and corded versus battery versus a real mower versus not mowing at all. And some updates about biking and driving and cyclists getting smashed and such. But I'll start with my observations of the day. What came to mind first was I passed this chestnut tree in full bloom today on the corner of Laurel and Grove Street. I love the smell of chestnut blossoms so much. If you happen to be walking or biking around in that neighborhood, take a big whiff on the corner because the blossoms won't last for long like this. My niece in Kentucky, when the chestnut trees there bloom, she's like, it smells like, I don't know, I just can't stand the smell, like vomit or something. But I think it smells wonderful. Something else that now is the season for mulberries. Though I feel like the squirrels and the birds are doing a number on a bunch of the mulberry trees because I haven't really found very many. Like the ones in our yard, the animals are getting them before they ripen up. But there's a tree on Elizabeth Street that's real good. Also cherries. a friend of mine let me pick tart cherries in her yard last night. And I was picking them and I was up in the tree picking and someone else who stopped by looked at the tree. She looked at all the cherries on that tree and she was like, are those for birds or humans? I guess they're just for whoever's up in the tree, whoever's picking them. And then there's another cherry tree in that like North Street neighborhood that the people who live on the corner there, I'm not going to say where it is because I'm hoping to pick there again today or tomorrow and fill my freezer. People that live there, they told me I could pick whenever, but they said, or someone, I can't remember if it was them or a neighbor, but they were looking at the cherries last week and saying, they taste kind of bitter. You'd have to pick an awful lot to make a pie. And I thought, I'm glad I have a different set of taste buds than they do, because I could just sit up here in this tree and eat cherries for like an hour, and they taste really delicious to me, like they have some of that wild black cherry flavor that when I was young, I thought that was bitter. But then as I got older and refined my tastes, I realized, that's real good. Especially things that come free from heaven. That tastes real good. All right. Next on Out There, I will play the interview with Brant.
So it's Bike Lab, and I've run into Paige and Eli and...
Brant.
So, Brant, you just went on a four-day bikepacking trip with some high school sophomores from Northampton High School?
Yes, we did.
How did it go?
It was, to be honest, I think better than any of us could have expected. Kids were super psyched and were often leaving the teachers in the dust. So we were kind of playing catch up, but we were a little leery of the weather leading up to the start on Thursday morning, but we delayed to miss the downpours. And then from then on out through Sunday afternoon, we didn't catch another drop of rain. And so we did three nights. First night up at Mohawk Trail State Forest, and then on over to, dropped into Adams and Pittsfield, and then we stayed at Pittsfield State Forest. And then we kind of came back halfway to Talon State Forest, where that Otis Reservoir is, and then on back to Northampton on day four.
Whose idea was this?
It was my idea. It's something I've been dreaming of for many years since I kind of got into bike touring. Wasn't always sure how to pull it together or if it could be done or if it, if there'd be student interest. And then COVID happened as well. But I kind of came into this school year, you know, we went back into the building and I felt like, okay, I'm done with my own grad school and, you know, COVID is doing its thing, but seems to be, we seem to be a little bit more relaxed about it. And so it seemed like, okay, now's the time. And I, at the start of the year, I had a couple kids as students who were mentioning they had done some biking. Ari was one, and I had another student, Ava, who had done a tour last summer. And so then I just started planting the seed and advertising it at school. And it started picking up steam and kept planning like it was going to happen, and then it happened.
Wow. How many kids were there?
There were seven kids, and then we had four adults that went along.
What was the gender breakdown?
We had one female teacher and one female student, and the rest of us were males.
Was there any issues with parents or like signing waivers, or what did you have to do around that?
I wasn't sure how it, I had to fill out some, I don't know, extra paperwork because we were doing an overnight field trip, and so the school committee had to sign off, and I didn't know how that would go, but seemed like whoever was reading that and in charge, it didn't seem like it was any big issue to them from my perspective of that meeting. And parents were amazing. Parents were so supportive and were psyched to have it coming together. And one set of parents hosted a sort of a practice ride start one Saturday, and then a different set of parents hosted us on our morning, the morning we launched on the tour. Yeah.
So what did you see? What did kids see along the way?
Oh, what didn't we see? I think in general, just this beautiful western half of the state. I mean, I feel like every time I'm traveling west of here, it continues to amaze me, the beauty and the lushness. And we saw more than our fair share of hills. We had some amazing climbs, amazing descents. We pedaled by the Gingerbread House. I think that was in Tearingham. We had some really, we had a sweet sort of wade and swim in the Deerfields. We all swam in the Otis Reservoir. We camped in an older growth pine section of forest. Lots of ice cream and all the camping food. From what I can tell, the kids were happily fed.
No accidents or anything unfortunate happened?
That's one of those things I feel like I never want to talk
about. Never mind. I did not ask that question.
We had one flat, I'll say that. We had, somebody had a little bit of brake trouble. But otherwise, it was really, it was all part of this operating better than we could have hoped. We were really lucky.
What kind of financial, what kind of expenses or financial resources did kids need to have to be able to go?
Good question. We had booked campsites, and that was actually the biggest expense. I'd say more than half the expense. part of that is because you have to book a two-night minimum, and we were only at each place one night, so we were paying for twice as much as we used. But so we, you know, we split everything amongst the 11 of us, and then the next biggest chunk of expense was the food, but I think it came down to like $250 a meal when it was all said and done. And so individually, kids, they definitely brought money for ice cream and snacks and lunch. We ate lunch out along the way, but we camped and made dinner and breakfast. And then I know, obviously, some kids had bikes before we started putting this together, and some had to navigate that and get a bike one way or the other. I don't know that anyone bought a new bike. I think there was some borrowing, and I think a few kids had to buy a rack, so that was an expense. And then we did some, we were able to borrow and share some of the panniers. So the bike, the rack, and the panniers are the biggies, for sure.
Yeah. In terms of like camping and food, do you know about how much that ended up being for the four days, three nights?
Yeah, so each person, each share, so there were 11 shares, and each was 60. For camping and food. Camping, food, and firewood.
$60?
60 total.
Okay.
Yeah. Per person. Cool. I don't know if I've said this already, but one of the fun things about this group is that they were all sophomores. Mm-hmm. It wasn't intentional, it just sort of happened. And, you know, the talk and the hope is that they or most of them will be back and want to do it again. And I'm hoping to pull this together every year. Maybe it's a springtime adventure. Every year, I'd be really excited and happy if that could happen.
Cool. Grant, did they miss school? This was a four-day trip.
Yeah, we did. We missed 2 days, and I wasn't sure about that either. But early on, the principal...
You taught math lessons on the trip to make sure they didn't miss
math? Well, yeah, we talked about how much each person would have to contribute. you know... The Gazette asked if this was academic, and it really wasn't, but I honestly feel like this was,
I mean,
academics aside, there were so many things going on for these kids out in the world.
There's such a thing as physical education.
For sure. We missed 2 days, and Principal Valancourt was totally supportive of that, you know, when I went to her in the beginning. So we did 2 days during the week and 2 days on the weekend. So we kind of gave some weekend time in return for the missed school time. And that's the question. Can we go bigger? I don't know. We'll see.
Do you know of kids in other schools that have done similar things?
I don't around here. And, you know, I've been dabbling with the touring thing, I think, maybe for about 10 years, maybe 12. And... I do one thing that just sticks in my head is a friend of mine. He's actually lives down the street in the neighborhood, John Fry. He had mentioned that's how he got into biking. Was he had a high school teacher in Ohio who had taken kids touring. And John actually spent time as a professional racer. So I think it was transformative in some way for him. But I didn't, you know, I don't know of it from my youth. Really, and I haven't heard of anyone else around here. I'm sure it happens, but I'm not in the know.
Anything else you want to say?
I think just that we were all so grateful that it unfolded like it did, and grateful for the support from the school committee and school, and certainly from my perspective, all those families that were part of it.
That was Brant Jones, math teacher at Northampton High School and cyclist. The bike trip was, I think, 2 weeks ago, 2 or 3 weeks ago. There was a little peep in there from Paige Bridgens and also Eli Damon.
So I'm Ava Mehta. I'm a sophomore at NHS. And I was on the Brant Jones Born to Ride bike trip.
Is that the official name?
No.
The joke name.
Well, it's not mine. I would just say NHS.
Born to Ride bike trip.
How was it for you?
Oh, God. How was it for me? That's a really good question. Personally, I thought it was really enjoyable. I know that since I hadn't been biking as much as I should have, it was a little bit harder. But I thought, you know, that was a really good mental challenge for me. because the first day we started out and it was basically all uphill for the first, yeah, for like the first, just for all of it, literally all of it. We had a few, we had like 1 7-mile downhill, and that was it. Uh-huh. And then the second day, it was like what, 20 miles uphill? Maybe 10?
Probably.
20 miles straight uphill, with a few flats in between, and then the rest of it was just flat and downhill, which was really nice.
Where did you, like the first day, where did you meet?
Where did we meet? We met at, can I say his name?
Oh yeah.
Okay. Whose house was it? Davis?
It was Davis.
It was Davis's house.
Oh, okay.
Can I say his last name?
Fine.
Davis Wheat's house. Okay, we met at his house. It was like 10:30 in the morning. Yeah, and so we all met there, had breakfast, went over like safety talk and whatnot, and then we just left from there.
You said you hadn't been biking as much as you feel like you should have. Like, how much are you normally used to biking?
Normally, I would bike literally every single day, to and from school, and then I would go off with friends after school and just do random bike adventures, but that hasn't been happening this year, and I haven't been forcing myself to do them, yeah.
How come it hasn't happened this year like it has in the past?
This year, I was really focused on getting good academics, because in first semester, I had a bit of a downhill spiral. So I really wanted to pull it together for second semester, and I did. I have all A's now, so that's good. Thank you.
Yeah, what would you say you learned from the trip?
Perseverance is key. Endurance, for sure. When you feel like you can't do anymore, just keep going, because you definitely can do more. It's just a mental game of thinking, can you do it? You know what I mean? And knowing that you can. So.
Did you ever think about quitting during the trip?
You're so funny. You ask great questions. Yes. The first day, I was complaining to Mr. Jones. I was like, Mr. Jones, this isn't right. You know, I don't feel like I should on a bike trip. And he goes, well, just keep going.
For the record, I didn't hear complaining. I just heard communicating.
I remember we were next to like a field or something, like coming out of woods. And I was like, Mr. Jones, you know, we're still close to my house. I could turn back and go now. And he was like, do you want to? And I was like, I'll see. We'll get to the town and then we'll see. And we got to the town and I decided to stay on. So, yeah.
That was on the way to Asheville, right?
Yeah, it was the first day.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That's up and up and up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is like Adams Road on the way to Pittsfield?
Yeah.
Let's just say it was not paved.
It was not paved. It was muddy. Like, and when I say muddy, I mean it was swampland. Yeah. We would like have to like trudge through the mud, push our bikes up through it, and then there would be the rocks on every corner, like boulder rocks. You'd have to pick your bike up and move it over. So
this was, where do we go to avoid this?
Where do we go to avoid this? We don't. We just did it. We just did it.
Yeah, this is, well, we left, we stayed at Mohawk State Forest, and then we from there.
Oh, it was the second day.
Yeah, it was day two. From there we went up, and it was really a road that travels through Savoy State Forest. And it just seemed like the most, if we didn't do that, we would have had either too much time on Route 2, or we would have been forced, I think, down to like 116 and just wanted to stay off of those, or just didn't seem fun to be on those roads.
So that was Ava Middaugh and Brant Jones from Northampton High School. And at this point, listeners, I'm very sorry to say that something happened to my recorder when we were sitting there in front of the high school. And I don't know if a leaf blew into it or what, but suddenly the sound just went extremely fuzzy for the rest of the interview with Ava. But she was talking about how I asked her if she had done similar bike trips before
And she said that actually she had taken several long bike packing trips in 2018 and 2019 with this organization called Overland. They do youth outdoor summer trips, hiking, biking, things like that. And she had actually biked from the Massachusetts-Vermont border up to Canada, and she had biked on the West Coast, like a long trip. And so she said it was frustrating, this trip, for it to feel so hard at the start when she had done this kind of thing before. And she also said she's going in July on an overland trip to bike through Europe.
I wanted to play Ava's song request. I asked her about theme songs for the ride, and she said, Wanted Dead or Alive. Song on a steel horse I ride sounds like an obvious bike song to me, but in the music video that I was watching when I played it on the computer, It shows Bon Jovi in an airplane. Well, songs are open to interpretation. I will interpret it as a bicycle song. Thanks for listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Out There airs every Friday from 4 until 5 with clips and interviews and rants of the week of people that I meet and thoughts that I have riding around Northampton.
When hybrid electric vehicles first started hitting the market, I remember conversations with cyclist friends about how the cars are going to be real quiet, you're not going to be able to hear them coming behind you, and at other times, so be super careful knowing that they'll be quiet. And yeah, I'm huffing and puffing because I'm pedaling up Grove Street with a trailer after riding for my life on Route 10, trying to make left turns in that high-speed highway. Anyway, so yeah, electric cars, and I was just going up Earl Street, and I could hear cars behind me, like it's a electric SUV, because you know, just the movement of the air and the tires on the pavement or whatever's making the sound. It's still making a lot of sound coming behind you, which made me think two things. Like, if you've listened to Out There before, you know that I'm not a fan of electric cars. I dislike them only a tad less than that I dislike gas-powered cars. And like electric SUVs, might as well make an electric bomber. Okay, that's harsh, but you get the point.
So also in bike car news this week, the young woman who ran over and killed Charlie Brown in front of the high school last October. Charlie was on his bicycle. She was sentenced this week. And she was FaceTiming with a 2-year-old in the back seat. FaceTiming as she completely ran over and crushed Charlie and didn't see him. And admitted to FaceTiming at that moment. She lost her driver's license for 15 years, among some other things. At the end of the article in the Gazette, it said that Senator Joe Comerford, State Senator Joe Comerford from Florence, she introduced a bill called Charlie's Law, which would prohibit people from videotaping or playing video while they're driving. And wow, like next they're gonna prohibit fishing while driving. Yeah, actually, and then I realized, but no, wait a minute, look at me, here I am recording and biking up Laurel Street, very dangerous. So now I've pulled over under the mulberry tree. More to check for mulberries than for biking safety, probably. Actually, another thing I noticed after I read that, the last couple days when I've been biking around, there have been a couple incidents where motorists have passed me, and I look over and I see the driver, like, texting as they're passing me, and I'm like, ooh, I want to videotape that. And I'm like, wait a minute, no. Don't be videotaping while you're operating a vehicle on the road, even if it's a bicycle.
Also, in terrible bike news, friend of mine that I work with on the Bikes for All project, which is that's a project of the Friends of Northampton Trails to distribute bicycles to people who need them and would have a hard time getting them otherwise. And you can find out more about that on the Friends of Northampton Trails site if you just look up Bikes for All under the Friends of Northampton Trails. But one of the people that I've been working with there, Salem, he was hit by a car last Saturday in Granby. It's actually a hit and run in the wee hours of the morning that left him by the side of the road. He's in the hospital recovering from traumatic brain injury, among other things. And Salem's partner, Adele, put out a Facebook post about how he's doing and how everything's going. I think they're still trying to track down the driver, the Granby police and stuff. And I just want to read this part of what Adele posted. she said, let's see, the police are working on the case. Thank you to everyone who shared the post with the incident to try and help track down the driver. If you're feeling scared about riding, get a high-vis reflective vest. They're awesome. I've been rocking one for about 6 months now and feel like the drivers give me more space. And remember that driving in cars is actually very dangerous, but most people don't think twice about that. Not to minimize the risk, just put it in perspective. So many folks have reached out and asked me what they can do. Start a GoFundMe, bring us meals. We don't need those things at the moment, but I did have an idea for something you can do right now, something that would really matter a lot to Salem. This idea is something that he and I talked about a lot before he got hurt, but I need to explain some things first. As you may know, Salem's no-car lifestyle has been a quiet form of advocacy for years. Advocacy via him demonstrating that the bike is incredibly functional, that we don't always have to use cars that are changing our world climate, and, as he would argue, disconnecting us from the world around us. When Salem, who's 48, decided to race again this year after 16 years off and ride to the races and tell this story and others in his blog, the blog is thegotbike.blogspot.com. Thegotbike.blogspot.com. So when Salem decided to race again and tell the story and others in his blog, he was embracing a more overt form of activism. He thought if he could ride all the way to a bike race and folks saw that, maybe they would be inspired to ride functionally too, even on smaller trips around town via bicycle. Every little bit counts. He wanted to shift the culture, and he knew he would get more of a platform if he did well at races in the pro field, so that's what he was going for. He was being a little bit quiet about it, though, waiting to see how the season would go and thinking to build a following before talking about it more and fully opening up into bicycle and climate advocacy. I don't think he even mentioned it in the DirtWire.tv interview because he finished at the back of the field in this first race, and he wanted people to take him seriously first. Salem finishing mid-pack in the pro field at Belltown, his second race after 16 years off, at age 48, was a big deal for him, most especially because it meant he could see himself doing well and gaining more visibility and a platform. Since then, he's been training up even more because he felt he had more to give and was getting faster. He was getting ready for the Gnar Weasels Shreddeth in Ascutney. He was really excited about the amount of climbing on the course. He's a climber, not a power rider. And also excited about running a slacker 120-millimeter fork. I don't know what all this means, but anyway. So what this all leads me to is that, yes, it is heartbreaking that Salem is hurt, and it's also sad his season got interrupted. And if you're asking what you can do right now, and if any good is going to come of Salem's visibility right now because of his injury, I think he would appreciate this, which is what he was racing for and what he wanted to inspire. Ride your bike. Ride your bike to commute or partial commute, to do errands if you can. Help increase mode share of bicycles. That's the percentage of travelers using bikes for transportation, as it makes all of us cyclists safer. The more we can normalize cycling as transportation, the more we normalize that cyclists have every right to be on the road and that cars, that motorists should be looking out for us. We need a cultural shift if we're going to stop warming the planet and change the expectations and behavior of drivers. We also need a cultural shift so people, especially avid cyclists who have the means and the fitness and the reasons to ride, think to choose their bikes over their cars. Do it when you can. I know it's a thing and not always possible. I'm stressed now and I'm driving every day instead of riding this week. Do what you can when you can. Also consider taking public transit, carpooling, walking, and do what you can to be intentional about driving when you do it. Combine trips, keep your speed low and efficient. Please don't text and drive. Actively watch out for cyclists and pedestrians on the road and at crosswalks. If an ounce of good is going to come from this awful incident and from this social media moment I find myself in the middle of, maybe it could be this. Be inspired by Salem. Ride your bike, commute, shift the culture, make the roads safer for all of us, save the planet. Be intentional about driving when you do. Just be intentional. If you feel like it, you can post your commute accomplishments on social media or do it quietly like Salem usually did.
or talk to your friends and neighbors about it. That is from a Facebook post that Adele Paquin, P-A-Q-U-I-N, I'm not sure how to say her last name, that Adele posted about her partner Salem, who was hit by a car and is having a slow recovery in the hospital now, I believe. And yeah, Salem and Adele and some others work on the Bikes for All project here in Northampton. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. After reading all that bad news, I think it's time for some Prince. This song's been in my head lately because I've been picking mulberries and thinking about about mulberry puree. Says, I put it on the back of my bike and we went down by Old Man Johnson's farm. See, that's a bike song too. It's all about bikes on Out There today. So, yeah, this is Out There on Valley Free Radio if you just tuned in. And you can listen to archived editions of Out There at weatherbeard.com/out there. And more about bikes. Surprise, surprise. Shannon from Valley Bike Share. At the opening of the Valley Bike Share dock on Riverside Drive in Bay State.
Shannon, back again. Today's opening day for, what is it?
Bay State Village Station on Riverside Drive.
How long has this been in the works?
So it's been in the works for about a year and a half, and we finally got all the parts that we needed, and it's up and running.
All right. And any specials on Valley Bike Share memberships?
So it's our fourth anniversary on June 28th. So from today until July 2nd, we'll be running a special on our founding member pass, which is normally $90 plus tax. It's going to be $50 plus tax. So $40 off. Get it while you can.
Wait, so the founding member, but if you're not a founding member, you mean you can still sign up for a founding member pass even though you were founded like 4 years ago?
Yes, you can, because every year we're adding new cities, so I figured we wouldn't get rid of it.
All right. All right, great.
We may change its name someday, but we will always have the higher price, slightly higher price pass for unlimited one-hour rides.
Cool. Have you ridden their bikes before?
I have ridden one time, and I learned that the old adage of you... it's like riding a bike. I forgot how to ride a bike since I was a kid. So I have just learned again, and this is my second ride, my first successful ride.
Uh-huh. Well, you had some unsuccessful rides?
I did. The first time I tried riding a valley bike, I fell promptly off because I had forgotten how to ride a bike. I hadn't ridden a bike in decades.
And a bike with the electric assist is even different from whatever you rode decades ago.
It is, yes. But now I'm a pro. I rode all around the neighborhood. This is great.
Yeah, Shannon wondered if the bike was ever going to come back.
don't dock it. I'm Emily Hamilton.
You live here in Bay State?
I do, just up the hill.
Hey, what are you going at? Like wood?
I'm probably just going to burn it. You want it?
Don't burn that. No, don't burn it. Hey, that's good. That's good stuff.
Yes.
Yeah,
oh, staples,
that,
though.
Put that away. No kid. Hey, you got chickens and no kid. Put that like that aside. Don't burn that.
Yeah. You know what? I'm not going to cut it up until it's time to burn
it. Yeah, I got a chainsaw made on a go-kart.
A
guy got a chainsaw on my car. See them things? He took them off. Yeah. You got your mom in the back of that log. I'm a truck driver. Watch out for your wife.
All right.
All right. Next on out there, we have Winston talking about Winston Close and Nari.
So Winston and Nari have come to Bike Lab. Winston, you were saying you bought a lawnmower. Did you have a lawnmower before?
Yeah, I had a Fisker's reel mower, and it was quite good, but any reel mower doesn't mow all the grass to the same height, so...
Reel mower, R-E-E-L,
yes.
For listeners.
Yes, the push-behind, unpowered kind.
The Human-powered. Human-powered.
Yes. Dad-powered.
Terminology.
Yeah, it was very sharp and very precise, but I still need something a little easier. It took too long, so I did it for 5-7 years, but I need some of my time back.
And so?
So a nice little electric one with a cord so that it doesn't have batteries are expensive, and they're intensive in terms of resources, and some of the ingredients come from war-torn countries where it has an even worse effect. So I try to avoid batteries when I can. They get depleted, there's another problem of throwing them away. Just a cord.
Cool. Mari, did you ever use the other mower? The reel mower?
Yeah.
Is it too hard to push?
It's not too hard, but it just takes a lot of time.
Mm-hmm.
Have you used the new one yet, or is it just...
It's on its way.
On its way, all right.
Are you going to want to use the powered one when it comes?
Yeah.
That's another thing
Sounds
I bought
satisfying.
It for, is to get the kids to mow it, maybe.
Yeah. Did you all do no mow May?
No mow May. I don't think I could do that. My lawn would go crazy. And then the real mower wouldn't be able to deal with it.
You have to scythe. I saw somebody... in late May, that was like trimming their yard with those little scissor things, and I thought, oh, they said you couldn't mow in May, but they didn't say you couldn't cut your lawn with a pair of scissors.
Someone on our street, you know, they grew hay basically, and then at the end of May, and they cut it all down and used the hay on the ground functionally as mulch for tomatoes that they then planted.
Yeah, I feel like that's what we should be doing. You know, let things grow high so the grass is a functional mulch hay thing.
I've heard it gets more bugs that way, but as long as you cut it from time to time, I suppose.
Yeah.
You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. That was Winston Close and Nari. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up at 5 o'clock. And next on Out There, I'm going to play a piece from my friend Pitt, Peter Pitt Mucuria. He's someone that I got to know through the Prison Radio Network, prisonradio.org. They have people who they have correspondents who call in from prisons around the country and leave their commentaries. And Pitt and I have been writing letters, phone calling, mostly just letters for the last year and a half. He recently got transferred through the Interstate Compact, but I think he talks about all this.
Hey, my name is Peter Kamal Mukuria, Comrade Pitt. So I've never written a diary before, but given this unique circumstance of being sent to another state to do my sentence, today being the 20th of April, I've decided to chronicle each day, events that occurred, random thoughts, hopes, etc., like a diary. I'm unsure where this will lead, but my life is pretty much an open book. Welcome to my modus operandi, day one. Today's my mother's birthday. I'm really saddened and not being able to call her and sing to her happy birthday, which is something I try to do each year, but I'm sure she understands. Early this morning, around 5:30 a.m., while I was at Sussex 2 prison in Virginia, where I had been moved to quarantine, three guards came to my assigned cell with a pair of handcuffs, shackles, and chains. The handcuffs were placed on from the front, shackles placed on my feet, and the chain went around my waist and connected to the handcuffs. A padlock is then used to lock the chain and handcuff in place to restrict the movement of my hands. I'm disgusted at how I've become accustomed to this routine. The guards escorted me to the front of the prison. I was placed in a holding cell, and the chains, handcuffs, shackles were extracted. And I waited for Maryland DOC to send their transportation to come and take me out of the hands of the Virginia DOC. A couple of hours went by of waiting in the holding cell. Then a guard brought me different clothing to change into. Shortly after, the major of Sussex 2 prison entered the holding cell, holding a huge manila envelope containing my file. Asked if I had a tattoo on my left arm with the name Eunice. I said yes. Asked me what my state number was. I told him. Then after verifying my identity, two Caucasian men in civilian clothing entered the holding cell. Asked me if I knew where I was going. I responded, Maryland. Once again, I was subject to a dehumanizing strip search procedure. Then allowed to put my clothes back on. The handcuffs, the shackles, the chain were once again placed on, and I was escorted out to where a gray SUV was parked. I was placed in the back seat and requested they put a seatbelt on. As we drove away from Sussex 2, my anxiety had kicked in full gear. Mind racing with a million of thoughts. I attempted to sleep the anxiety away, but my mind simply wouldn't shut down. When we got on I-95, I was looking at other motorists as we drove past them or they drove past us, thinking how vastly different our destinations are. I saw a car pull over by a white cop, and the driver was a black male with a lady on the passenger seat. As we drove away, I hoped that stop would end without the driver's name trending on social media as a hashtag. This other car we drove past was a black woman by herself driving, singing, and grooving as though she was Beyonce. I left, thought wherever she was going, she was definitely taking good positive vibes and energy with her. My eyes were wide open, looking at everything around me. I saw signs and exit markers of places I had been and still know people who reside there. I saw the Hopewell exit, Charles City, Petersburg, Chester, Chesterfield, Richmond, and Rico and Hanover. These were places I had been countless of times. Seeing these familiar exit signs, how I had hoped that the driver would somehow go rogue and take one of those exits and let me see how my family and friends, even if for just a second. Ah, wishful thinking. As we got closer to Northern Virginia, near D.C., traffic became a problem due to road construction. As I continued observing my surroundings, mesmerized at the most minutiae details of everyday life, my mind was also fixated on what lied ahead. After a long, slow ride, we reached D.C., and from a distance, I could see the National Monument and also what was unmistakably the U.S. Capitol building. My mind instantly went back to the images of January 6th. At some point during that trip, I dozed off, but I woke shortly as we took an exit off the highway to a town called Jessup, Maryland. the prison wasn't that far of a drive from the highway exit. I was astonished at how massive the overall structure was. The vehicle transportation guards took time to exit the vehicle and place their weapons in a secure box. Then we drove into the prison. Upon entry, on the first door we entered, awaited a nurse with a clearly African name tag and accent, was there to welcome me with a temperature check. I walked into an adjacent room. I was instructed to sit down on a bench and wait for a few minutes. 20 minutes or so or later, the transportation guards who transported me to the prison came back to extract the handcuffs, shackles, and chains. My right hand was swollen due to the lack of blood flow from the right handcuff being placed on too tight. I began to open and close my hand in order to get some blood flow into my hand. A short while later, a guard from Jessup Correctional Institution, who was assigned to intake, asked me to step into another room where I was once again subject to a strip search procedure, then changed into a pale blue jeans, white t-shirt, and a sky blue shirt with huge inscriptions on the back of and on the back with the letters DPSCS. I'm still not sure what it means, but I'm confident in something along the lines of property of Maryland. After changing clothes, I was handed a plastic bag containing two sheets, one pair of boxer briefs, one t-shirt, one towel, one wash rag, and two state-issue roll-on deodorants, one toothpaste, toothbrush, two shaving razors, five shaving creams, two soaps, a pen, and a writing tablet. I was then called to yet another room where I was fingerprinted, had a picture taken for the prison identification card, and was allowed to make a five-minute free call. I proceeded to call my fiance and updated her on how the day went and asked her to let my parents and those close to me know where I was located. After this brief call, I was then asked a bunch of random questions, allergies, religion, etc. The intake guard left after I answered these questions. As I sat there waiting, a second African nurse came to check my blood pressure. Then a guard whose name I also recognized as being African, accompanied by a familiar accent I've come to recognize, gave me a lunch tray. He was spaghetti with meatballs and sauce, three slices of bread, box of orange juice, and an apple. It was actually worth eating, and the portion of it was to the point I couldn't finish the whole tray. At Virginia prisons, one is fed just enough to survive. After indulging in a bit of gluttony, an African-American woman who fingerprinted me earlier came to escort me to the housing unit I was to be warehoused. While on the way, she revealed something to me that made my ears perk up. Apparently, they were told that I'm not, quote-unquote, CO friendly. I simply told her that I just don't like those who abuse their power. I asked her how she felt about the George Floyd situation. I then made that connection between those police officers who abuse their power and prison guards who also do the same every day. It was actually an interesting dialogue, and I gather she only works here because of the pay. If she had a better career option, she wouldn't work here. And I've noticed this with other guards in Virginia. In most places, prison is a huge economy. Therefore, people get jobs at these places simply to make ends meet. But in the process, power corrupts them. And they also fail to realize that they are pawns used to strengthen the prison industrial complex and perpetuate the culture of mass incarceration. We arrived at the building, and upon entering the door, there stood in front of me about eight guards, male and female, all of them with African names. Two of them escorted me to the cell I would be temporarily housed in. I cleaned up, placed the mattress on the bunk, and made the bed, took their remaining clothes out of the plastic bag, folded them, and placed them under the mattress to give my head some support. I collapsed on the bed exhausted from the journey. My emotions were scattered all over. Incarcerated friends of mine in Virginia who I may never see again, in another state where I know not a single soul, would this place be a continuation of Red Onion Prison, etc. Then a tray was brought to my cell. I forgot what it was, but I recall I finished the meal. With not being able to sleep, I went to the cell window, started gazing at the blue skies, lost in thought. I once heard that meditation helps with anxiety, but honestly, I've never attempted it. Maybe that was a good time to start. The night sky made its appearance. As long as I have a pen and a paper, I'll always have something constructive to do. I decided to write down my thoughts, observations, experiences, ideas, etc. of these next 20 days. Soon after I started writing, it was shift change. As I got up and walked through the door, sticking to the theme of the day, it was two African guards conducting counts. As soon as the shift changed, I noticed it was all African staff. I went back and lay down, laughing, thinking this was God's way of playing a joke. The prison where I was previously confined, the staff was all white in the rural Appalachian region, a prison constructed on top of a mountain, Now, I was at a prison where the staff was the polar opposite of Red Onion. On top of that, I was born in Africa, Kenya. As immigrants, I could relate to their journey, but that's where the comparison stopped. And also, the hiring practice of the Maryland Department of Correction is very obvious that they are simply targeting immigrants. I flicked the cell light on and off. I attempted to sleep. My body was exhausted, but once again, my mind simply wouldn't shut down. So that was my day one of leaving Virginia and arriving to Maryland. I will be doing a 20-day journal entry, but that is basically just a taste of how it will be. Once it's fully completed, I will let y'all know. Thank you for your time. As always, all power to the people.
These commentaries are recorded by Prison Radio.
That was Peter Pitt Mukuria, my pen pal buddy. And that was from his April transfer out of state to Maryland. He said they lost his property. He eventually got two of the three boxes back. Well, that was when he wrote, when he last wrote me a week and a half ago. He eventually got two boxes back at that time, but the third box, which was the one that had his legal paperwork in it, he hadn't gotten back yet at that time. He's part of a ACLU case in Virginia against the Virginia Department of Corrections for their practice of solitary confinement. And you can hear more commentaries by Pitt on Prison Radio or from correspondents all around the country. You're listening to Out There. Oh, one more thing I want to say about Pitt. The theme of this show, there's been lots of talks of cars, crashes, whatever, bikes, crashes. He's actually in, as I understand it, on a second-degree murder charge for killing a man by crashing a stolen car into him. All right, Democracy Now! Is up at 5 o'clock. Today's Friday. Anyone that plays Pickup Ultimate, there's Pickup Ultimate in Haydenville. It's 6 o'clock on Fridays on, I'm blanking on the name of the street again. This happened last week, but it's right near Bread Euphoria. Last week, I couldn't even remember the name of Bread Euphoria. Anyway.
Ebony and ivory live together in perfect harmony, side by side on my piano. What we need to survive together.